Okay, House Education Committee has called to order. And today's Wednesday, February 22, 2012. Time is 8:03. President Dar, Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Representative Alan Dick. And we do have a quorum. Want to remind everybody, including myself, to turn cell phones off, or at least on airport. And okay, and Representative Sisson is ill and is excused. So, first order of business today is a presentation by Superintendent Phil Knight of the Aleutian Islands East Borough School District. Following that, we'll take up HB 256, dealing with school district restoration. Testimony today on the subcommittee, and the committee substitute for HB 256 is invited testimony only. First, I have a few remarks to make, and then Annette will walk through the bill section by section. Following that walkthrough, we will take testimony for those who are invited today to provide it. And Superintendent Knight, thank you for joining us. Committee aide Annette Kreitzer will move us through your PowerPoint presentation when you're ready. Please introduce yourself for the record as you begin your testimony, sir. Well, we have no audio.
Chairman Dick.
Oh, go ahead. We got you.
Good. Thanks. Thank you.
Oops.
Second.
Huh? Come on. It's not working. Can you hear us, sir? You can hear us. Okay, hang on. We're working on this. I really want to do this iPad to iPad. I wanted every one of us here sitting with their own iPad. See, okay. Well, we're heading there. Try again. And for the record, Representative Pruitt is joining us while we're doing a little technical adjustments here.
Good morning, members of the House Committee. Mike?
Okay. Phil, it's still not, we're still having technical issues here. Hang on a second. Why don't we just use the telephone? One more time? Just trying to get our technology going here. I know they had it working before we got here. I was watching the rehearsal.
Yeah, it's just, it's the actual Wi-Fi connection. It's the reason it's so in and out. Do you guys have this phone?
Do you want an at ease?
Well, please, brief at ease. Okay.
Provision from 75 to 50 to 25, and we'll be rolling out of it. I think this is one of those situations that from my experience is that you're dealing with an issue in terms of when a school becomes so small, does it become ineffective? And I think that's what we're dealing with. We'll have one school in this fall. We anticipate three students, and I know again from my experience in the lower 48, you just can't provide good education for three students. So we're looking for some alternatives that might be available. A number of our individual families in the smaller communities actually have relatives in larger communities, and we're working towards seeing if we can make those necessary modifications. But again, I applaud Mayor Stanley Mack in terms of the work he's done and also with the assembly, because they were one of the few, if not the only, school district in the state that's been able to keep these individual schools open. You know, if the numbers were down to five, that might be an alternative. We haven't explored that yet, but any help would help us tremendously.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, sir. I did speak with your representative, Bryce Edgman, the other day on this, and so we are aware. And let us know if we can help you, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions. The first one's real quick. The NYO under activities. What does NYO stand for?
Native Youth Olympics.
Ah. Okay. And then the second one is, how much were you able to get when you sold the skiff? You wanted it to cover your cost of your materials plus a little extra so that you could, make the program better. How much were you able to get for the skiff?
This first round, it was the first experience for us. We wound up with $5,001.
All right.
And it didn't give us much, in terms of the program for the future, but we had learned, in a sense, how to be marketed better, because we've actually had several people that came in later and they said, well, we would have given you $6,500 for it or $7,000. So I think the first round we probably, we took single bid that was available to us, but I have a feeling now that some of the fishermen have seen what the skiff is and the quality of the skiff, that in the future we'll probably receive more dollars.
Fantastic. That's wonderful.
Any other? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. On your iPad deployment in K-6, have you been able to get see what your kind of interim results are in that?
We haven't at this point in time. I think that it's going to be beneficial for us. I know we've set up, for example, where we have a series of apps that are going to be utilized. So it's so new to us. We started it this last year. I might share with the committee, if I may, kind of an anecdotal in terms of what's happened in the education of our young people and how we transition to technology so quickly. I was approached by one of our librarians. Actually, it was the librarian at Sandpoint. And we were talking one day, and she mentioned to me, she says, I'm having real problems with some of our little people. And I said, well, which ones? She said, first, second, third graders. I said, what's the problem? And she said, well, they come over to her desk, and they start poking at her. She has a large monitor there for her computer. And she says it's not touch sensitive, but they're so used to using the iPad now. They don't even know what a mouse is. So I thought, my goodness, how technology has moved so quickly. So I think that, to me, that told me a lot about how we have to keep vigilant in terms of the work that we do and making sure that we offer various types of new technologies to our young people. But I think the iPad, too, is going to be a real plus for us, and eventually we'll probably deploy it at the secondary level, because as we're moving out the laptops, we're finding out that the iPad, too, has a lot to offer. And they're pretty secure individual instruments. The other thing that we're seeing too is you can buy two of them for the price of one laptop. So we're learning as we go.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
And thank you. And I was just wondering, are you checking those out to the students? Because I know when we've had reports from Canby, Oregon, and all that, one of the greatest things about it was that students would take them home, and then they would, do those educational games and things and extend their actual learning time. So are you just using them in the classroom, or are you actually individually assigning them?
In response to your question, Representative Seaton, one of the things in the laptop initiative, one of the things we did is we checked those out 7 through 12. We have had some damages along the way, some of them incidental, some of them maybe purposeful. But when we came to the iPads, we decided to go ahead and keep those in-house. And they're in outer boxes, which is another mechanism, as you know, to keep them secure. So that's been a plus. So right at this point in time, we've got them basically in carts in the schools. We'll probably learn a little bit more before we move in that other direction. I was at a meeting at AASA just this last week, and I was talking to some of the other soups, and it's kind of a mixed bag in terms of whether to check them out or not. We'll learn more, I think, this year, and then probably make a decision whether we want to move them off where the students can take them home with them.
Okay, Phil, I really appreciate, and say... Say hello to the Woodards in Acatan for me, if you would, please. The excellent presentation. It's a part of the world that many of us don't know about. It's interesting. The last presentation we had was from Delta Junction, and they're also using that Bush physics class out of the university with Dr. Dan Soli. So it seems like that technology is working for us. So thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, and thank you, committee, for the time and efforts that you put into the work that you do for our students. Again, thank you all very much. Bye.
Thank you. Okay, to facilitate discussion on HB 256, I'll turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Pruitt before I begin my remarks.
All right, at ease while you guys get ready.
I would like to point out the fact that the issue of intervention was significant enough that there's a comparable bill on the in the Senate side where they're also speaking to this issue. So we're not alone in our perception and of a need for change. And the elements that are in this, and Annette's going to walk us through the sectional because she worked more closely with Charles Wolford and has that aspect of it down way better than I do. I'm just going to give the highlights, and then Annette will take over. First off, the feeling was that if we change the term from intervention to restoration, that in itself would just set the tone and the atmosphere. So that's one of the elements of the new bill. The other one is that the calls for an evaluation of the Department of Education by the superintendents in the state, and this is just the promoting the idea of accountability, that if there's somebody in one of these remote places that has a concern, needs somebody's attention, that they can use that evaluation as a means of getting the attention of either the governor, the commissioner, or the legislature. So the intent there is just that we're account. Each one of us is accountable to 16,000 people, and the idea was that the department would also be accountable to you know, to other entities within government. One very important element in this CS is that putting an absolute end to the role of a trustee, because the role of a trustee just doesn't seem to coincide with the concept of collaboration, and that it's calling for the coaches that work with the districts, that the choice of coaches and even the roles the coaches would serve in the districts would be a collaborative, chosen by the department and the school district needing the assistance. There is a specific strategy for improvement. I remember when the commissioner spoke and the assistant attorney general spoke, they're afraid that if all we did was repeal SB 285, that it'd create a vacuum. And so with that, we responded to that, and we do have a strategy for improvement. And this is just simple steps of, you know, year one, year two, year three, and maybe in year three we'd get some, you know, calling in some more firepower, some more expertise, and really focus. I had expressed to me on the part of some of the intervention districts that they've felt left out of the loop with the Board of Education. So one portion of this bill calls for if an intervention district is to be a topic of conversation within the Board of Education would notify that school district and that they would get to participate in that meeting. They would be they get to comment about the comments. Another element I felt was very, very important was that it's referencing the Alaska state cultural standards, that if a district is going to be restored and if there's over 50% Native students in that district, it's very important to use the cultural standards. I believe you have them in your packet. And we have the Alaska standards for culturally responsible schools. This would be the foundation for developing strategies. And this, I think I referenced before, this was written 14 years ago by Native educators, Alaska Native educators with doctorate degrees, master's degrees, bachelor's degrees, people who have lived out in the area that we're talking about. And as I read through this with Representative Heron, it was interesting. We were both reading it, and we were chuckling, and he just said, This is common sense. So there's no rocket science here. It doesn't have to be rocket science. It just makes sense. It directs how students are going to behave in a culturally responsive school, how the educators are going to behave, and how the attitude of what the curriculum is going to be composed of, and how the schools themselves will perform, and cultural standards for the community, how the community needs to be better engaged. And I can promise you, I was there when this document was being crafted. It was wordsmithed and wordsmithed and wordsmithed. I don't believe there's a word you could add or take away from here without radically changing it. Pretty concise, very to the point. The new bill also insists that research, we often hear a comment about we need research-based education. But if we research the best footwear for winter footwear and we only did the research in Texas, we might not come up with something that would work in Barrel. And the unfortunate part is that all the research that we're imposing upon these districts that need help is research that's been done in places that have very little similarity. So this bill does call for research that is done with our target audience. If we're going to help improve them, we need to have some research that directs us in that. And foremost, it takes the sole authority away from the Department of Education to redirect district funds. This is, as I've spoken with superintendents, this is the greatest concern. I think I mentioned that one of the best superintendents in the state was concerned that by 2014, every school district will be out of compliance with No Child Left Behind. And the concern was that the department would use that noncompliance in order to redirect funds. This bill allows the redirecting of funds, but it's part of a team and with a broader awareness of what the issues are, and that the local school district, the superintendent, and the board would be in on the conversation. So the real emphasis was in terms of. The real emphasis wasn't just in terms of, again, with just summing it up with just the word collaboration. I think Laskin's a very, we all have an independent spirit, and we can do almost anything in cooperation, and as soon as we feel pushed, there's resistance, and we end up with not the same positive result that we could have. So that's my very brief, concise summary, and that's going to walk us through the sectional. We put a tremendous amount of labor into the new CS. I'd like to thank Jean Michelle over at Ledge Legal. She's been on our radar with a total focus, and she's put a tremendous number of hours. We will open this up for suggested amendments, and the amendments will be due in, I believe, next Monday, if you don't mind. But we will address this again, and we welcome your comments as to how we can make this a good bill. So with that, with that, I will turn it over to Annette.
Thank you, Representative Dick. Ms. Kreitzer, if you would, please walk us through the, I believe, sectional is your intent, and put yourself on the record for us.
Thank you, Representative Brewitt. This is Annette Kreitzer, staff to Representative Alan Dick. I want to make sure members have in front of them the sectional analysis, CS HB 256 education, and at the bottom the date is February 21st. Be in all of your packets. Okay. And start through. The first language change is going to be on page 2. So this section amends the department annual report. It amends the requirements of the Department of Education and Early Development's annual report by removing the reference to schools having a designation of in crisis, since that term is not defined. It replaces the term intervention, as Representative Dick said, with the term restoration, since that is the goal of the efforts to assist these local school districts to improve their instructional practices. It does add a requirement that the department report the reasons for turnover in certificated personnel, not just the numbers and the percentages. In section 2, under school and district accountability, it requires the department to give technical assistance to a public school or district that receives a low performance designation. This is in recognition that smaller districts may not have the technical capacity to devote the appropriate resources to developing a district improvement plan. I believe this was part of the point that Judge Gleason made, and I do have for the members copies of Judge Gleason's ruling and then the Moore settlement, if you would like to have that as part of your packets, and I can, when I finish, pass them out if you'd like to have those. Don't want to over-paper you, but if you want them.
Yeah, Representative Wilson?
Thank you. I'm looking at Section 2 of the bill right now, and I don't see where it actually requires the department to give the technical assistance. It says that they should give assistance. It should prepare and submit to the department, the school improvement plan, but it doesn't say assistance with technically, it doesn't say technical assistance. Are you talking about technical to me sometimes means broadband or that type of thing? So will you define what you mean for technical assistance?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson. No, this is the sectional analysis is a summary using words that may be broader than the actual language in the bill. And so it's just meant to encompass the kind of talent that is specific to creating a school improvement plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Moving on, Section 3 adds a department accountability section. So this is a brand new section. It sets up a process for superintendents to evaluate the department, as Representative Dick said, as to whether the department staff were supportive of the district, a description of the support received and evaluation of that support, evaluating the quality of the level of contact the district had with the department, its reporting requirements, the department's reporting requirements, and how the department may improve services to the district. These evaluations then would be summarized in order to protect the identity of the innocent, to protect the identity of the superintendents who are participating in that evaluation. Certainly you don't want to have hard feelings, or you want to kind of have a arm's length relationship there between the evaluation and the department being able to respond to that in a productive way, and superintendents feeling that they can provide candid comments without fearing, I don't want to say retribution, because I don't believe any commissioner really has that in mind, but you just may deal with someone differently if you know that they're the one making certain kinds of comments, critical comments. Section 4, this is the amends duties of the department on page 3. It amends the duties specifically to include more cooperative opportunities for the department and school districts. It includes an opportunity for school and district personnel to participate in the department's review of the needs of Alaska's public schools toward the goal of improving those schools. In adopting regulations to implement improvements, the regulations must include appropriate cultural standards that must be included in instructional practices in districts in which 50% or more of the students are Alaska Native. The department must identify intensive learning opportunities for each district, analyze community involvement and methods for improving it, address teaching capacity, retention, and development, and provide for technical assistance to teachers, ensure districts develop and maintain elective and career and technical courses, notify a district of a low performance designation, and offer, again, I've used the word technical, but the specific assistance consisting of predictable research-based strategies tailored to Alaska before beginning state restoration activities, and describe research-based strategies that target educational performance. The department has to employ qualified personnel to provide advisory or consultative services to districts. However, those services that are provided must be consistent with AS 1407-03014, which is amended in the bill. The restoration activities, as Representative Dick said, do not include hiring a trustee. The regulations ensure, the department must ensure that elective and career and vocational courses are included in regulation as a minimum course of study. And it removes the requirement that student proficiency be tied solely to standards-based assessments. The district must demonstrate 3 consecutive years of improvement or measures identified as indicators of student success and achievement under AS 1403-123F. And standards-based assessment is part of that, but there are other factors under F. And then at page 6, beginning at line 23, we're trying to hit the highlights in the bill and not note every single change. When a school is designated as low performing, the rest of Section 4 sets out a collaborative rather than a punitive process for the department and the district to work together to improve school performance. So after being designated a low performing school for 2 years, the superintendent of the district and the commissioner shall select appropriate independent experts to evaluate the school, prepare a report for the commissioner, the local school board, and the superintendent. And the report will also be made available to the public by posting an internet summary. If a school is designated a low-performing school for a third year, there will be frequent consultations between the department and the staff at the school and the superintendent. A school improvement team will be established consisting of the commissioner or designee, the district superintendent, school improvement coaches, a member of the local school board, and a member of the legislature. The school improvement team will evaluate the school for best practices applicable in Alaska relating to major areas of school administration, governance, and instructional practices. In Section 5, at the bottom, beginning at the bottom of page 7, the powers of the department are amended essentially to add in many of the things in previous sections of the bill, specifying that regulations adopted by the department related to restoration of a school or district must be consistent with federal and state law and the Superior Court's findings dated February 4, 2009 in Moore versus State of Alaska. These regulations must provide for, again, qualified employees to exercise supervisory authority for instructional practices. Training and other support is necessary to implement a school or district improvement plan. Regular monitoring, evaluation, and modification of improvement efforts tailored to the strengths and weaknesses of school district. This is another one of those areas from Judge Gleason's ruling. Availability of courses and remedial programs necessary for students in these schools to meet state standards for graduation in the expected time frame. In Section 6, again, powers of the department. Before the department may redirect public school funding for a low-performing school, the department must assemble a school improvement team, and that team must have requested funding to be redirected for a specified purpose related to improving instructional practices. They must provide notice to the legislative committees with jurisdiction over education, which is a current requirement, provide notice to the district, and provide an opportunity for the district to respond, and establish a timeline for redirecting the funding back to the district after the team determines improvement has occurred. Amending in Section 7, again, powers of the department, this adds language to codify the cooperation that should exist when instructional coaches and expert staff are brought in to assist a low-performing school or district. And Section 8 amends the State Board of Education duties, requiring the State Board of Education to review the department's compliance with its statutory responsibilities. And it also requires the board to provide the superintendent and local school board, who are the subject of an item for consideration on the board's agenda, an opportunity to notice that the item is on the agenda and an opportunity to respond. Mr. Chairman, that's the walkthrough.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure there will definitely be some questions. One of the things that I'll start with and then let some of the others. In Section 3, you mentioned, and I think I believe I heard Representative Dick mention this as well, is that that other superintendents will be a part of an evaluation process. What I want to clarify is, how confident are we that superintendents from different districts will be fully engaged in understanding about what's going on in whatever district that we're dealing with? So, for instance, if there's a district, we'll use Aleutians East just as an example because they spoke this morning, and obviously they were doing very well, so they're a good one we can use here. Let's say that they're struggling. How comfortable would we be with having a Fairbanks superintendent, for example, try to say how well they're doing in an area that he's not familiar with.
I started to say through the chair. Annette Kreitzer again, Mr. Chairman. This section is actually the evaluation of the department by superintendents. I think what you're referring to is the opportunity for superintendents to be involved in an evaluative way with other school districts that are struggling.
Right. And I may have gotten the section wrong, but I just remember the conversation, and you sparked it when you were.
And I know Representative Dick has thoughts about that, but coming from an EMS background, there is a thing called critical incident stress debriefing. And when you have a negative event happen in your community, a critical incident stress debriefing team will come and stand alongside you. And as a EMS squad leader, they would, if it were to happen in my community, they would send a squad leader who has, when I say they, the state public health division, I'm not sure what it's called now, EMS folks, and even the, for me it was Southern Region EMS, would send out an EMS squad leader with rural experience, the same kind of number of runs that we would normally have, because there are differences even in rural squads. If you do a great number or very few squads that have had similar experiences, and we've talked a little bit about this, that the kind of team that Representative Dick is contemplating kind of, in my mind, makes me think about the CISD teams, which are teams of people who have applicable experience and yet can take you one step beyond. It's not just, you know, we're at the same level, but it's also somebody who can help you move beyond where you are.
Okay. Representative Seaton, and then I see both of you, so we'll make sure that we
point,
get to,
yeah.
On that point?
Yes.
Representative Wilson, on that point.
I think, too, that I know from experience with my husband as a superintendent that he would, whenever there would be a new superintendent that would come into the state or something, he would call them and talk with them, and so that superintendent would have somebody else to bounce questions off of or just thoughts and whatever, and he would do that with several different superintendents. And then when they have superintendent meetings, they get together and different superintendents talk and visit and help each other if they can. And I think that's important too, because there's a lot of superintendents that know what's going on. I'm sure he's not the only one that did that. And so I'm sure that there's a lot going on within the state that superintendents know kind of what's happening, just like us as legislators, we'll call each other and say, you know, what's happening, how is this going, and whatnot. And so there's a lot of that camaraderie that happens with us happens with superintendents also. And so they're pretty much aware, I think, of what's happening even in districts that aren't theirs.
Okay, thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to have to leave for another meeting, but I was just curious on Section 1 on page 2, line 14. Is your intention there to have the state make a requirement for all teacher and superintendent contracts that they incorporate a exit interview that comes back to the state instead of those hiring practices being done by the individual districts?
If I could respond to that, this is Representative Ellen Dick. Yeah, as I inquired as to, we talk about teacher turnover, and as I inquired of the department that, well, why are teachers leaving the intervention districts, I got just three anecdotes. One said my wife is pregnant, the other one said I didn't like the assistant superintendent, the other one was the report that you had heard from the commissioner the other day. And so the intent here is that the department would at least make best effort that as teachers leave these restoration districts, that we would make an effort to find out why they're leaving, and we could use that as part of determining how to best help those districts.
And just to follow up,
Senator Seaton,
I think the way it's incorporated here, it's a statutory requirement that the department will have with every exiting teacher, and so it seems like that they would have to get into the contracts the pre-contracts of teachers hiring that would agree to fill out that information. So if it's intended to be superficial and just find out what we can but not be a state mandate requirement, I think that we need to look at that. So we're on page 2, line 14. I don't see how they can give that
Mr. Chairman, if I'm lying,
that information unless there is a statewide requirement and we're putting it in the statute.
Right. Ms. Kreitzer?
Before you have to leave, Representative Seaton, I don't think, having done and overseen exit surveys for state employees, I don't believe that the department has to get into the contracts or pre-contracts of teachers to be able to conduct an exit survey to be able to ask them why they're leaving, if they are leaving. And that's up to every district to be able to do that. And every district wants to know why it has teacher turnover. It's expensive to bring in other teachers. And so I don't think we see it as a burdensome problem for a district to be able to summarize that information and report it to the department.
And Mr. Chairman,
follow up.
I don't either, but the requirement here is that the department shall do this, not that the district shall report and the department will summarize. I'm just pointing out that trying to figure out what the intent of that language was. So, I mean, that'll be explanation further on. I'm not asking for a resolution now. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is it related to this subject? Representative Wilson.
You know, it says the department shall provide to the legislature. It doesn't say that they have to go get it themselves. They can get a lot of this information from the school district.
Okay, good point. Thank you, Representative Wilson. Representative Kawasaki?
I'll just start with one question. I've got a ton of questions on the bill, on the department accountability in Section 3, it asks that the superintendents of each school shall provide. What if superintendents don't want to provide information to the Department of Education? Yeah.
Section 3.
That would be page 2, line 28, yeah. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Says they have to.
Yeah, it says on page 29, shall.
Well, through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I imagine they could turn in a blank evaluation. Representative Allen Dick here. The intent, of course, is that to provide superintendents the opportunity to give feedback, to those who are concerned. So let's work together on the wording of that. The whole intent of this, I mean, we're talking about collaboration. And so if we, in this whole process, if we can collaborate to make this happen, I believe it will be the intent of the whole bill right from beginning to end. I'm actually hoping to draw on the experience of the committee to come up with the best bill possible.
Did you have other questions, Representative Kelsey?
Not yet.
Not yet. I'm sure there would probably definitely need to be some processing that will take place by the committee with the new CS. Anything, Representative Wilson, at this point in time?
No. Just a comment. I really think.
Representative Wilson.
I think in the long run, I think you're on the right track here. And this, in the process of doing this, this will be a learning experience for the schools, and it'll be a little bit of a learning experience for the department. And have you thought at all of using this as a three-year pilot to see if it's made a difference and if it's helped? I really like it, actually. I think there should be something in here that has a look back after so long, so that the department has a chance to say, we've been working on this and it hasn't worked, or we're finding that this really is working pretty well. I think we should have some kind of feedback to us. Well, and I do realize that we are to get a report on some of this, but I think we need to have a time when we sit down and really look at the whole thing and see if we need to make adjustments or not.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that excellent suggestion. Yeah, that we're calling for evaluation, and maybe this process needs to be evaluated down the road, too. So we need to be able to come back and revisit this and see whether this really spoke to the actual need.
Representative Jake, question I have is, it comes out of the section also. It's not specific wording or whatnot. I just want to make sure under this section 4, you guys put in the sectional that there would be frequent consultations between the department and the staff, the school and superintendent. Of course, that's after low performing school. They've been designated low performing school for 3 years. If I understand some of the current what's going on currently is there's some concern about the department's interaction with some of these with some of the schools, how they've come into the schools, and would frequent consultations would it still be kind of the same thing? I mean, how are we differentiating from what's currently going on, and are we not going to allow people to go into the schools? Is it just kind of a back and forth, and how are we going to make sure that we're improving those schools? Because it's still on the state to make sure that they're meeting those standards.
Representative Pruitt, excellent insight. I think the intent here was that the whole intent was that there would be like to be no coaches that weren't there were all coaches would be chosen collaboratively, and the purpose and the assigned duties and expectations of the coaches would be done collaboratively. Right now, we just have coaches that are out in the districts doing what they're being told to do by the department, and there's perception out there that that if there was input into that process, that it could have been it just would have been a lot better atmosphere and a better product in the end. So my understanding at this point is that was the intent there, that there would be constant feedback in terms of the coaches, what they're doing, what their assignments are, and how they were actually performing.
So kind of the discussion that I have would be obviously understanding the sensitivity of the issue here and the fact that we're trying to make sure that we're not creating a hostile environment there. It's still on the state and the department. It's on their shoulders to make sure that they're educating to the certain levels. And how comfortable are we with having the district that may not be hitting those goals with playing a part in that and deciding who's going to be the coach? I mean, at this point they haven't hit some of those metrics. And the state coming in and saying, okay, we're responsible for this. And if we've got, and in that district, you could have not just a superintendent, you could have a school board, which we're not necessarily sure that they're going to have some of the expertise that even the superintendent or the district would have. And we're going to ask them to collaborate with the department, and again, the department will have to still be responsible for the end result because it's on their shoulders.
Okay, what I sent over to G. Michelle and what we have here, I'm still doing a comparison. I believe every one of us has the spreadsheet where in year one, year two, year three, and if we could follow that at some point. But I believe what I'd like to do is former Commissioner Jerry Covey is with us here, and he can be here a little bit longer. He helped craft a good part of this. So perhaps we could even ask that question of him, because he was the one that really had the most insight that I drew from.
Okay. If he is here, I wouldn't mind hearing from that, but I don't know if we want to hold off and have him do that here in a little bit, or
I believe that's. Dr. Normick is next.
That's what I thought.
And we have Dr. Normick is next, and then we have Doug Conboy and from TVAC, and then. Former Commissioner Jerry Covey is here, and he will speak to the positive aspects of intervention and restoration.
Okay. If Mr. Covey will just take note of that, and please be ready to speak to that at a later point. We'll take Representative Wilson, and then we'll move on to Mr. Eck. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really feel that our present commissioner is trying to basically do these things, and And so before we get done today, I hope we can hear from him and hear what he has to say about it, too, because he's coming from the other side, and I think I would like to hear what he has to say about this at the in the end.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Representative Dick?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it's always our intent to engage him. So if time allows, but I'm just very concerned that we do get the testimony of the people that have had a hard time to line them up. So, okay.
All right. What we'll do is we will, Dr. Norm Eck, are you online?
I am, sir.
All right. What we'll do is we'll have you start your testimony. Please state your name as well as your affiliation. And in the process, Representative will come back up to the and take his place as chair. Go ahead and start, Mr. Eck.
Thank you so much. For the record, I'm Dr. Norman Eck, superintendent of Northwest Arctic Grove School District. We have 1,950 students in 12 schools in our 11 villages. None of our villages are accessible by roads, and all supplies have to be flown in. I've been employed by the Northwest Arctic District for 14 years, 1 year as a director, 5.5 years as principal, and now I'm in my 7th year as superintendent. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you today. I support changes in language in school intervention law. We need to be sure we have as an objective intervention process as possible. We need to focus on what things are needed based upon the local school situation, and listen to local voices, as well as provide guidance and support to the educational programs in place. It does little good to go back and complain about past problems or grievances with the Department of Education over how we were treated when Northwest Arctic was under intervention by the department. However, now that we're working to craft a better and improved process and model for intervention, it is valuable to look at past mistakes, mistakes of my own district, and mistakes of the Department of Education, in order to put in place an intervention process that will be a positive model for students, staff, community, and school. Working together and placing the needs of students above all else, we can do this. First, we must have an objective process for intervention within a school. To place an entire district under intervention may not be what needs to be done. For example, Northwest Arctic, as an entire district, was placed under intervention on account of 3 schools with poor academic achievement. But a number of our schools were doing very well. Additionally, when Northwest Arctic was placed under intervention, 2 other districts were also placed in intervention at the same time, Upiat and Lower Yukon. However, there were 7 other districts with student achievement scores lower than Northwest Arctic, but those districts were not placed under intervention. The placement of Northwest Arctic seemed to me to be a political, or you might say subjective placement, rather than an objective placement. Second, programs that are considered best practices in general by educators on a state or national level may not be strategies that work well in some of our isolated rural villages. We need to look at the local situation and evaluate what can work best here, and then look at choices and see what the local capacity is for program change. In the case of Northwest Arctic, the Department of Education dictated specific best practices and had given instructions to observers and consultants to come and do certain things that were in conflict with what is the best program or action to take locally. Much of this failed. Third, the current instructional improvement plan that the local district or school may have in place needs to be looked at and worked with before it is thrown out or overwritten by a plan that is dictated by the Department of Ed. In our case, when intervention was put upon Northwest Arctic, we already had an excellent improvement plan in place. We had already contracted with certain consultants to help us in a constructive manner. We were forced to use the Department of Education's plan and then overlay that plan of the department's consultants in our schools. Fourth, the Department of Education alone lacks the depth of knowledge and expertise to conduct the intervention process. Even today, The situation in the Upiat district is one of conflict with the local district instead of working in concert and supportive of the district and its administration. For example, expertise from other districts in the state can be a most valuable resource for advice for a fellow district in need. School board members from other similar districts can be a resource and support to the local district board members in need as well. Surveys and inventories of processes and programs should be undertaken. Other districts with similar professionals can be a most valuable resource to the intervention school and to the Department of Education in these cases. These are good reasons to be concerned about the intervention process and how it has worked and not worked well. In the case of Northwest Arctic, we were fortunate to be able to establish good relationships with the head consultants assigned to our district, John Holst and Richard Tephart, over a period of 4 years. We learned from them, and they each learned from us, and we worked together to improve services to students. Finally, I want to commend the Department of Education for releasing Northwest Arctic from intervention in August of 2010. In August of 2011, Yukon-Koyukuk was released from intervention. A national statistic is that only 5% of districts that have gone under intervention have been released from intervention. I want to commend the Department of Education and the governor for the settlement in the Moore case. The process for providing target assistance to low-performing schools, as lined out in the Moore settlement, can be very instructive to us. The solutions are not dictated or directed by any one party, by a coming together of parties, listening to the needs of the local school, and providing help that is requested by the intervention school in the categories authorized in the agreement. In this way, much can be accomplished. Finally, for successful intervention, or better term, school improvement, a process of assistance must be detailed that will provide supports for the students, teachers, administrators, communities, and school board. Districts that need help must be afforded a process of intervention that truly assists the schools to enable improved student academic performance through targeted assistance in terms of personnel, policy, and finance for specific programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Normack. I would like to mention, too, that Dr. Normack was the superintendent of the year, and was that 2008-2009, sir?
9 and 10.
So he does have the, certainly has the confidence of his colleagues, and I know he's very highly respected, particularly amongst the superintendents that teach in rural areas. Are there any questions from committee of Dr. Normack? Okay, very well stated, sir, and we all have we do have the copies of your testimony. There's a couple of committee members that had to step out for the conflict, but I know they all have a copy of your testimony, and we will have this discussion down the road. Thank you. I surely appreciate. Do we have Doug Con? Okay, thank you. Do we have Doug Conboy of CHEVAC, Superintendent Kishunamut School District? Doug, are you online?
Yes, I am, Representative Dick. Can you hear me?
Yes, I do. But before you do, I would like to make mention, I read your testimony, and I'm going to lift up for the for everybody in the room here. You're going to refer to the Teaching for Excellence, and this was the, and I'm holding up now, this is the program that was used by Yukon-Koyukuk School District, and this is the program that they attributed when they were exited from intervention. This, when I asked the teachers and the superintendents there, they said this was the reason why they were able to increase their performance, and this is the reason why they were able to improve their performance such that they were able to get out of intervention. And Doug is going to reference this as the PEAK program, and so I just wanted everybody to be aware of that. Okay, Doug, if you'd identify yourself for the record, sir, and give your testimony.
I'm Doug Conboy, Superintendent of Schools at the Kishunamut School District in CHEVAC, Alaska. Mr. Chairman and committee, thank you for the opportunity to give this testimony this morning. I began my tenure as superintendent of schools in Chivac in July of 2009. I actually was offered and accepted the position in April of that year. Early on, I was aware of several important issues that were going to need to be addressed. For starters, we needed to coordinate the curriculum at the Cushunamit School District. Leadership of the school district had undergone a significant change with a new principal and myself coming in as superintendent. We had several new members of our teaching staff as well. We started to clean up the curriculum issue in April, immediately after my hire, by going after some things that would help us to develop a coordinated curriculum K through 12. We wanted to find a literacy-based scope and sequence reading program for grades K through 8, which we found. We made sure that Cushunamit School District had a team in the state-sponsored Curriculum Mapping Institute workshops that were scheduled for the fall of 2009. Our next effort, or the second effort, was to work at improving the learning environment. And to that end, we contracted with PEAK to train our staff in best practices for teaching and learning. In September of 2009, I was contacted by Deed and told that some Deed people would be coming to TVAC for a visit. I asked what the nature of the visit would be and was told it would be purely supportive in nature. That visit took place over a 2 or 3 day period shortly thereafter. In meetings with the DEED staff, we were asked what we saw as problems in the district and also what we planned to do to address those problems. After laying out what we had identified as our most pressing issues and showing the DEED staff what we had planned to do to address them, we were praised for what had been done and for the direction we were taking to make improvements. DEED staff asked that we document our efforts and record progress. The Cushunamit School District staff was already doing that, and we continued to monitor what we were doing, noting problems along the way and the adjustments that we were making toward the goal of implementing our plan. This kind of retooling of the delivery of education services takes time, and our plan was to work on this over a much longer period of time than one school year. This was communicated to the DEED staff with favorable reactions from them. Later that same school year, a group charged by DEED to conduct an instructional audit of our district got in touch with me. After asking several questions of this audit group, I was told that the audit came as a mandate from DEED and that it would occur in early March. We were then presented with a lengthy list of materials and items that the auditors would want to see when they came, as well as a list of people they would want to interview as part of their job in TVAC. Later calls from these auditors referred to this as an investigation. I took extreme exception to that term, and I asked them if we had done something wrong or had broken a law. At that point, they said no, and they tried to assure me that what they were doing was not to find wrongdoing, but to help us. We took considerable care in preparing a portfolio for the auditors containing all the information they had requested and a schedule of the people they wished to interview with dates and times. After receiving the portfolio, the auditors called back to tell us they wanted to change the schedule around. They were then told there would be no schedule changes. The auditors were being allowed to disrupt our daily schedule already, and that level of disruption was not going to increase. We provided them everything they had asked for in our portfolio, and we would adhere to the schedule in it. The audit was conducted over a 3 day period in March of 2010. Several weeks later, we received a report from the audit. In that report, we were told the things we already knew. The curriculum was weak, assessment also weak, leadership not strong, learning quiet, climate quite good, etc., etc. All of these things were the same as we had discussed and gone over with the DEED staff back in September. However, this report was written in such a way as to indicate that this was news to us. In late April or early May of 2010, I received another call from DEED in response to this audit report. The purpose of the call was to offer me some quick fixes. At that point, I lost patience and strongly disputed the concept of a quick fix. First, there is no such thing as a quick fix for education. Second, if there were quick fixes, why wasn't DEED telling schools about them before they got into trouble? In essence, this call was made to tell me to do what we were already doing about problems we already knew about. And again, I got the impression that we were regarded as too stupid to know what the problems were and also too stupid to know what to do about them. This caused me to have 4 specific questions. My first question: how much money did it cost to send the DEED staff to Chivac in September? Second question: how much more money did it cost first to pay the auditors and then to bring them to Chivac to do a totally redundant report? Third, what happened after the visit from D staff in September to demand this audit? From my perspective, it had to be that we were not trusted to do what we said we were going to do about the problems we had identified. Fourth, what sense does it make to expend this amount of funds and time to tell schools things they already know and then to order them to do the things they're already doing? I don't see this as a reasonable use of state funds. And given what seems to be a scarcity of funding at present, I cannot help but think that this expenditure should have been avoided due to its redundancy. The individuals involved here were doing what was asked of them, and as such, I have no hard feelings toward any of the people personally. But I do take exception to a course of action that is redundant and wasteful of both time and funds. So I guess I question not the people, but perhaps the mission. And that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it. You know, when I was seeking testimony, there was no shortage of people that were willing to talk to me, but there was a shortage of people that were willing to testify. And so, Doug, I appreciate your boldness in this effort, and I know you wordsmithed this very carefully, and I appreciate your attitude as you did so. Any questions from committee of some Superintendent Convoy? Okay, excellent testimony, sir. I appreciate your effort. And former Commissioner Jerry Covey, please identify yourself for the record, sir, and take your liberty.
Good morning, Representative Dick, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Covey. I'm an education consultant. I'm based out of Anchorage, and as Representative Dick mentioned, I was Commissioner of Education for Alaska under Governor Hickel, and I've worked extensively with school districts across the state for about 12 or 13 years as a consultant. Included amongst my clients have been districts that were or are under intervention. And as Representative Dick also mentioned, he invited me to spend some time with him crafting a bill that would move things forward. The initial version of this bill was to remove the department's authority. As we discussed that, I shared with Representative Dick that I did not support that. I think there's a need and a reason for the department to intervene when school districts are not performing over a long period of time. My concern as a person who's been involved as a consultant to intervention districts is how the intervention occurs and how can we shape an intervention going forward that is responsible to the requirements and the mission of the Department of Education and also responsive to the rights of local school districts to get this right as we go forward. I'd like to speak first to Representative Pruitt's concern. I appreciate your concern, and that's something that I spent a reasonable amount of time discussing with Representative Dick. First of all, I'm not convinced that in all cases local decision-making is the best, and I think that it's conceivable that the department would come into a district, make some recommendations that were viewed as reasonable that would be viewed as unreasonable by local people. Not everyone has the same capacity, the same understanding, the same motivations to do things. So, and intervention by its nature puts people at odds initially. That's what happens. And so objectifying the process is what I was aiming at as I worked with Representative Dick on crafting this. I do think bringing in other individuals who have an accurate understanding of the realities of delivering education in rural districts would be of value, because I think it would objectify the decisions that are made. If it's a recommendation by the department that something is done differently, other superintendents, board members, business managers, or whoever come in and say, yes, that is a valid recommendation, that's based on best practice in Alaska, that's realistic, then I think And if the board were resistant, then as it's reported out to the legislature, you would have an objective opinion. You would have a validation. If, on the other hand, the board or the department were overreaching and were making recommendations or requests of a district that were not validated by an independent group, you would have that information. It objectifies it. In the case of potentially redirecting the activities at the local level, we have some greater validation of whatever it's decided that should be done. So that's the intent behind that. I think it works both ways, and I commend the department on the settlement of the Moore case. I was involved in that as an expert witness for the state, actually, and so I can see this from both sides. And I think this is not perfect. It has to be worked out. Representative Wilson's idea of let's take a look at this again down the road is a valid idea. The old saying, no plan survives its collision with reality. There's a lot of truth in that, and I think that it would be good to take a look at this. I'm not convinced that every item in here and every step is necessary or appropriate. I think that's something that will have to be determined as you move this forward. But I do think it provides an opportunity to collaborate in ways that we have not been able to collaborate in the past. And regardless of intent, you've heard from superintendents about their views of what went right, what went wrong, and whether it got back on track. And I'm sure that you've heard views from the department. The real trick in this is not what you write on the paper. The real trick is the deployment. It's a challenge. It's more challenging unless you've been there and understand it firsthand. The challenge of delivering these services in ways that are supportive and in ways that are influential in bringing about change at the district level, that's a big challenge. It's a big challenge for the department to get people out there, the logistics of winter travel, of classroom time, et cetera. Those are very difficult to accomplish. At the same time, the challenge of convincing the department from the local perspective or from the educator perspective about the realities of educating people in that environment is equally challenging. So bringing them together in some deliberative, collaborative way on the front end to decide what you're going to do and then move forward with it is, in my view, an appropriate response.
Any questions from committee? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When schools, I'm thinking back in my mind, when schools do strategic planning for mm-hmm. their future. Mm-hmm. If I remember right, when the first day when they get together and with the people of the community, mm-hmm. it's pretty stiff and it's mm-hmm. not comfortable.
Right.
And the parents might say one thing and the people of the community and the school might think something else. And mm-hmm. so at first, it's very, very uncomfortable, but you don't give up then, and you kind of keep going because the second day and the third day, things mm-hmm. get better and people open up and are willing to kind of give a little bit. But so that takes a little time, and I'm thinking that when we go out to start that collaborative process, we have to realize that it's not going to happen the first time you meet. Mm-hmm. And that people need to verbalize and be angry if they have to and state some things. I can remember when you came to Wrangell mm-hmm. and did that. Mm-hmm. I can remember hearing you two talk about it afterwards and discuss what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's an important thing for us to think about when we get with the community and the school and the department to try to start that collaborative process. I would say that's going to take every night for a few days before mm-hmm. that can kind of coalesce and come together. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, thank you, Representative Wilson. My view on that is that you are correct. Collaboration requires time. It requires commitment, sincere commitment on each side, and an appreciation for different viewpoints, and respect for a specific process that you're putting forth here. And based upon that and positive intent, I think there's great opportunity to move forward. But it is a challenge, and I believe that this bill, however it is in final form, will create a structure that will support that type of work.
For the record, we've been joined by Representative Fuggy. Representative Kawasaki, did you have something?
Yes, I do. Thanks. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here and your service to the state on education issues and service to this committee, continued on education issues. I'm new to the committee, as are a couple of us, and when the issue was first brought to our attention from the chairman, who's been a champion of this bill, we heard from a couple school districts that we heard from one school district in particular that there wasn't the collaboration there, and I think that's where the bill currently in the previous version of the bill are focused toward. I mean, can you tell me from your experience as a former commissioner how you worked collaboratively with districts in the past, how you see that different? It seems to me that there's actually more collaboration than we've ever had, and I just want to hear your comments on that because of your former experience.
Thank you, Representative Kawasaki. You're going to tax my memory, you realize. It's been a long time since I was actually commissioner. I'm not sure just how to tackle your question exactly, but I guess my views are probably reflected in the language of this bill and how to work cooperatively with districts and collaboratively with districts in this way. I believe that ultimately the facts speak for themselves. Levels of achievement at the district speak for themselves. The success rate of students are there. So what do we do with them, and how do we process things in a collaborative way? My view would be we begin with the facts, and then we examine potential processes that we can employ that we can hopefully agree upon, and if we can't agree upon, we can have some objective opinions applied so that there's a consensus at least that this is the way to go, and then that we put a process in place and we stick to that process, and that from that point on, each side has to live up to their commitments. Whether it's the delivery of services or whether it's the honest intent to incorporate these new strategies at the local level.
If I could respond to that, too. You might remember way back a couple, 3 weeks ago when I introduced this, so we talked about how there was after the beginning of the REAAs, there was a tremendous amount of independence, and we found that some of them did exceptionally well and some of them just weren't doing. There was just no accountability whatsoever. So then Commissioner Covey said, we need some accountability. We need some standards. And I know there was he endured quite a bit of unpopularity as a result of that, and I'm thankful that you did that. The level of specificity of those standards back then was far broader then than it is now. But former Commissioner Covey is the one who actually called the REAs to accountability in all state schools to accountability. So I think the conditions that he operated under back then were quite a bit different from now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wait,
go ahead.
Just a follow-up question on the text of the bill, specifically dealing because you mentioned objectivity and sort of that we wanted to get objectively what's going on in the individual districts that are considered under intervention or low performing. When I look at the page 2 in section 1 dealing with the percentage and the number of turnover of personnel, and then it's added in the reasons for, that seems like a subjective objective metric. And then further down when in Section 3, when we're talking about the superintendent's rating the department, whether the department staff were supportive of the district is just one of those, you know, evaluating statement on how the department may improve. That's actually good. But, you know, it seems just more, it seems like there's a combination of subjectivity and it's not objective at all.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of address that?
And yes, then, I can.
The transparency issue about do you want to know who the superintendents are that specifically have problems, that specifically have issues, or is that better left anonymous?
Okay. I think in terms of all of those, I do believe that organizations that have that have data can respond to that data. If we don't have it, we can't respond to it. We can standardize a format to collect information about why teachers are leaving districts. It may be subjective, it may be questionable, but we can do it in a standard way across the state. And we could see what that tells us and if we believe that that's valid information or not. In terms of the department being evaluated, you know, if you look across the nonprofit sector in general, and certainly in the for-profit world, evaluation is part of what organizations do, and they do take a look at themselves. And I do believe that there could be a format, a standardized format, to evaluate the services of this department or any department of state government from a stakeholder's point of view or a customer's point of view that would reveal some valid information. So, I think it's not a question of whether it's valid. I think it is valid. The question is how do we do it in an objective, appropriate way.
Excuse me, if I could maybe respond to that too with a specific example. Like one of the superintendents came to me, won't name the district, who last year was on the, in terms of the maintenance, school maintenance, was number 25 on the list, while the state funded down to 20. And so that superintendent said, okay, next year I'll be number 5. Mm-hmm. And that next, and then the following year, that superintendent was number 53. And that mm-hmm. superintendent was pretty bewildered by how did that happen? Do we have a hurricane, earthquake? How did I end up number 53 on the list? And so he was not able to get an answer to that question. And I asked the commission about a month ago, and I haven't gotten an answer to that question yet either. But I believe that's a valid question, and it's a source of frustration, and particularly in REAAs, because when city schools need maintenance, what they do is they'll just bond for it. The state pays them back. They all the maintenance they want done, they can get done. Where the REAAs are on this list, it keeps moving, and there was a question is what criteria are used that would end put me 25 one year, 53 the next. And that's the type of question that I think superintendents would like to have asked and have answered. Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a former commissioner, what are your thoughts on trying to, in essence, legislate collaboration? Obviously, the individuals in place in the department have a key factor or they're a key element of that collaboration. And, you know, this is my first, you know, the first opportunity interacting with a commissioner, and I've heard from multiple individuals, you know, that they appreciate the collaboration that's taken place. So I don't want to speak negatively about past mm-hmm. ones, not understanding mm-hmm. them, but I would think that there's, even with certain legislation indicating collaboration, it's still up to the individuals in the department. So putting it, you know, codifying it and putting it in statute, is that a necessary way to go about this, in your view?
Thank you for your question, Representative Pruitt. I appreciate it. I've pondered that myself, and I've talked with Representative Dick about that. In my view, we cannot legislate collaboration. We can legislate specific processes that organizations go through. It appears that we have, as a state organization, education has an issue on its hands here with intervention districts. And to start the process off, the department initiated, went to the legislature, and sought and received authority as directed by NCLB, to intervene in school districts. In the process of doing that, perhaps they didn't have the time or the incentive, or I'm not sure what was going on at that point, but perhaps more forethought could have been given. Of course, hindsight's 20/20, but more forethought may have been able to given to the process of how do we do it, and in a way that is least disruptive. And perhaps that's what they felt was least disruptive. But the long and short of it is that it's several years later. We've got some districts under intervention, and some of them are squirming. They're not happy. They don't feel they've been attended to, and from their perspective, the department has tried different things to respond to them, and I believe that they've made some modifications in their delivery. But we're still not there. And so what this legislation does then is it formalizes a process. It objectifies a process. It leaves less to chance in terms of how we're going to engage, how the department will engage with school districts to accomplish that. And I think that's an appropriate response by the state at this point. I don't know exactly that everything that's in this draft will or should be in the final draft, but I think we're moving in the right direction, because what we want is a process that, to the extent it can, requires each party to step up to the plate regarding their obligations, and also it reduces the ability of each party to simply say, hey, that's not how I want to do it. And by bringing in outside expertise and validating and objectifying things, I think we can move in the right direction.
I know Representative Wilson had an issue, but if I could just very quickly outline here, and I believe we all have a copy of this in our packets. Yeah. Just really quickly, and this is what former Commissioner Coveney had put together. The idea being that there's 3 years: year one, year two, year three.
Might have been on the table.
Do we have one for on the table?
We can all okay. Share.
Well, the main idea, and I'll just read the first box, and we can go from there. It says, year one, by September 15th, the district needing assistance will be evaluated by independent, recognized expert or experts in the areas that may include business service, board governance, leadership, maintenance, human relations, instruction, and the degree of community interaction with the school and preparedness of students to learn. That puts some responsibility on the parents for sending students that are ready to learn. And it also identifies the areas by which the expert would go in and look at those, each one of those components. It's not always curriculum. We're always focusing on curriculum, but many times it's other elements. By October 15th, the report will be made available by the expert or experts. By November 15th, the superintendent and the department will choose a coach to address the needs identified by the expert. So that is the focal point here. Then after, and then the second year, the superintendent would have the opportunity to pick a second coach of his or her choosing, and the idea being that the first one was done collaboratively with the department, but that superintendent might say, boy, I really need somebody that, you know, maybe Woody Wilson would come down and help him or her, you know, and with a very specific issue. So that would give the superintendent the opportunity to say, this is the person I want to work with. And then the third year says that year three, a team will be formed that will evaluate the original results of the original plan. The team will develop a 3-year restoration plan, and then that team would be made up of the department, the superintendent, the coaches that have participated and have experience, the school board, and a member of the legislature. I believe the member of the legislature is pretty important, because if Representative Heron had been involved in the issue going on in UPS School District, his district, I believe that things would have been very different. Also, I believe that we as a legislature have a responsibility. My understanding is that we make laws, we allocate funds, and we have a responsibility for oversight in over the educational system in the state. And I believe that we need to take a better role in that. We need to be better educated about that function of our responsibility. That's why I suggested here that a member of the legislature be involved. And then that team will develop a 3-year plan. And the idea here, a copy would be sent to the parents, the department, and the legislature, again, mutual accountability, and the information would be posted on the school website. And one of the reasons here I thought is pretty important is that a superintendent's position in a district is a tremendous amount of turnover. It's a high risk profession, and there's things that sometimes that a superintendent can't say to his board or can't say that an outsider could say. I'll give you an example: one of the lower performing school districts had a tech person that was hired locally, and that tech person was maybe the biggest obstacle to getting things done in the district. Well, that superintendent wasn't able to directly speak to that. But if a coach come in and an evaluator comes in and says, listen, you got everything right except your tech person isn't lining out here, then all of a sudden the superintendent says, well, what do we do about it, instead of that superintendent being on the spot and having to deal with local politics. So, and then the other issue is, I really believe that there's a need for accountability for parents. And I believe somebody needs to be able to speak to, and I'll say this, that somebody needs to be able to speak to and send home to parents the statement, how can I teach a kid that shows up at 11 o'clock stoned? I mean, somebody needs to be able to say that. And in my mind, that would be these coaches that would be able to speak to that. The department can't speak to it because the department isn't there. The superintendent can't speak to it because the superintendent is totally immersed in the local environment. I believe there's a need for it. It's somebody coming from the outside, coming in and being totally honest, calling for accountability from all aspects. And that's why we mentioned up here about the preparedness of students to learn. I think this speaks to all aspects of education in districts and schools that are having difficulties. And so this was just a rough outline as to how this might happen. Year one, have an expert or experts come in, and that the coaches chosen, maybe with a specialty that was identified by the expert. Year two, just broaden the superintendent's ability to draw an expertise statewide. In year three, we will come up with a plan. It involves the board, the superintendent, Department of Education, but again, it's a collaborative decision, not done in isolation down some river that's out of sight and out of mind. And I believe it does call the legislature to recognizing our responsibility in improving education in this state. Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that I wanted to point out here is I appreciate you covering each of the different years, the sequence of the assistance there. In choosing the coaches, so the second set of boxes, a school board indeed will choose the coach, then school board does it, and then as part of a team, we have deed, superintendent, coaches, school board, member of legislature. One of the concerns that I'd have coming off of the fact that we just lost the Moore case is that no matter what, the state, deed, is still the one that's responsible for this. And in this case, in one particular year, they're not going to have any discussion on that coach. It'll be solely on that local school board that has already made some of the decisions to which has gotten them to this place where they need to be intervened. And then even in the third year, Deed has one seat at the table, and we have the superintendent, the school board, member of the legislature, and coaches. So we have individuals. We only have one member from Deed. And again, it goes back to I think what we need to make sure that we're very cautious about the fact that if someone's going to get sued, it's going to be Deed. And at this point, we may not be giving them the tools to be part of the collaborative process when they're not even at the table in certain circumstances. And maybe Mr. Covey has something to say to that.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I certainly appreciate your insight there. And I think we do need to look for balance in all of the processes. Certainly the department needs a strong voice in this. Certainly the locals need a strong voice in this, and I think we can find ways to modify things to accomplish that. What we don't want to do is overpower anyone in the process, because that certainly doesn't support collaboration. If I may, one more quick point. In Representative Dick mentioned the importance of outside expertise and the fact that not all local decisions are perhaps the best decisions, and I think that's a valid point. And some of the outside experts coming in can point that out. And also, we don't see as a rule that a district would be struggling with its instructional program only. If that's in peril, we often find other systems within that district in peril also. So as a result, it is appropriate to take a broader based look. Perhaps some things such as teacher housing, things such as instructional leadership and support within the district, decisions made by the school board, the maintenance of their facilities, there could be a lot of things, how they use their finances, all could be contributing factors to this. They're not necessarily, but we could investigate that and see how they relate.
Thank you, Ms. Cook.
Okay, and I do want to mention for the record that Commissioner Hanley is here, we're fine, but since the commissioner is here all the time, and Jerry Cubby is, we have him for one-shot deal. Representative Kawasaki did want to hear from the commissioner, and I promise we'll certainly make all the time necessary to hear from the department. But I just want to explain that dynamic. Representative Wilson.
I like having something set out so that we kind of, so the expectations are mm-hmm. But I'm just a little concerned that we wait till year three to do a three-year restoration plan, but maybe that takes that long for the process to work. I don't know, but that seems like a long time, but maybe it takes that long to get to that place. So mm-hmm. somebody...
If I could speak to that, right now under No Child Left Behind, there's really a five-year plan. Year one, you're notified. Year two, the kids get to travel to another school, which doesn't apply in Alaska. Year three, the students can call on free tutoring by the school district. Year four, there's some pretty severe restructuring. And year five is where you actually start doing some radical action. In this plan, we had this conversation, the commissioner mm-hmm. and that's why we condensed this down to 3 years. Okay. So that as soon as a district dips down and is perceived as needing help, year one, you come in and you come up with some coaches and you get some help there. Year two, get a little more help. And year three, that's when we're going to get firm with a more firm plan. So this actually shortened that process from and No Child Left Behind was a five-year. Representative Feige, did you have something?
But could I ask the commissioner
former
commissioner what he thinks on that, because it might be totally make sense. I don't know.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Wilson. In fact, it might as part of the collaborative approach to addressing the needs at the district level. It's conceivable that they might begin on step two if that's where they find themselves. If that's I think having the flexibility in the processes, as long as we know what the processes are going to address, then there could be flexibility in how this is set up and structured and where it works.
That makes sense.
If I could respond to Representative Pruitt too, you said we lost the Moore case, and it was really the people of Alaska won the Moore case.
You're right. I didn't indicate that. I mean, what I meant to say was the Moore case was directed to the state. It was directed at the Department of Education. You're correct, and I apologize for that.
No problem at all. And I guess the thing, and I'll be really candid, and I won't get into the detail, and I've said this before, is that I looked at the state system of support manual, and I actually saw very little in there that would do a district any good at all. It's like if you tell your teenager, as you drive down the road, stay on the road and you won't hit a tree. Well, that's obvious. But that's all that manual really did, was it just said, stay on the road and you won't hit a tree. And I just think there's a lot more answers that I believe are in this very slim document that has been referred to as common sense. Okay. Former Commissioner Cummings, I know you need to go. Any thoughts to wrap up, sir?
Well, I think that this bill presents an opportunity to be fine-tuned and for the state to move together with districts in a way that will result in better services to students. And thank you for taking it up, and thank you for having me here today.
Thank you, former Commissioner. We now have a face to put with the voice, and maybe we'll call on you telephonically down the road.
Thank you.
I sure appreciate. Any other comments from committee? Okay, good. Let me come to my script here, and we'll... Okay. I really am interested in the comments of the... Oh, excuse me, go ahead.
I just thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought of something that kind of makes sense. One of the superintendents that spoke made the comment that if all the schools are doing okay, but there's a couple schools over here, maybe we should address that and say, okay, why are these schools not meeting AYP when the rest of them are? Because a lot of districts have many schools, and you know, this little area over here isn't doing good, but the rest of them are, and they don't make it sometimes because of one school even. And so I think we need to look at that and maybe zero in on at least the thoughts process there.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Wilson. No other thoughts? Okay, definitely interested in comments from anybody anywhere. We're just trying to come up with a good process here. We do want to hear from the department, suggestions, and we will bring the bill back next week to entertain amendments, and we'll try to move it along to the next committee. Please get the amendments to my office by Monday so we can distribute them to all committee members in the department. If there's any further discussion, good. Okay, Friday, February 24th, 8 a.m. in this room, we will hear superintendent presentation from Klawock School District and HB 330, State Education Standards. With no further business before us, we are adjourned at 9:58.